Welcome to a La Trobe University podcast. I would be your host, Matt Smith, and my guest today is Professor Trevor Bird. He's the Chief Research Scientist from the CSIRO ICT Centre, and he's also the President-elect of IEEE Antennas and Propagation. He's here today to talk about antennas and the work that he's done on them in his career. But first, we'd better find out, what exactly do antennas do?
In the simplest form, the antennas are a means of collecting and transmitting electromagnetic waves, and particularly in the radio part of the spectrum. There are many forms of antennas. They can be very large collector reflectors, or they can be the sort of dipoles that one sees for TV aerials, but they effectively are able to receive and transmit if the function is to transmit.
What are they transmitting and collecting? What sort of waves?
These are waves in the frequency range normally from fairly low hertz, around the 10 hertz, up to the optical and infrared part of the spectrum, which is in the 20,000 gigahertz region, which is quite a long way up, but that's what they call the radio spectrum. But the most used part of the spectrum is for TV, which is around the 100 megahertz, and the work that's going on here and the radar work is working in the 8 to 20 megahertz region. That's a wavelength of about 15 to 20 odd meters. And then for radio, which is used for wireless local area networks, you tend to use 5 gigahertz moving up in the spectrum. There are backhaul systems as part of a wireless network which operate at 20 to 30 gigahertz, and so that's in only 1 centimeter. So we're pushing up into nowadays in terms of the systems that are being built, wireless systems that are only 1 millimeter in wavelength in the higher gigahertz region.
It's a very widespread technology in a vast field. If we didn't have this sort of equipment, this sort of technology, what would we have to do without?
Well, for wireless communications, we would have to use cables everywhere. We'd be attaching cable to a connection in the wall, which we obviously still do. But for some of the areas like radio astronomy, we would have to go and visit stars or planets or whatever to find out what was actually going on there, whereas using radio waves we can remotely infer what's going on. The same thing, we can learn from radio waves what's happening in the ionosphere and what's happening to the atmosphere through radio emissions.
We wouldn't be able to do things like forecast the weather as effectively, that sort of thing.
Certainly, yes, that's right. Weather is one very important part. You can understand and we can predict, find out information about the sea. So there's a whole lot of environmental things that you can find out by inferring from emissions from bodies that in the radio spectrum, because they have a finite temperature, the black body radiation, and that we can pick that up using an antenna of some form and for telescopes and looking at bodies outside the Earth.
What kind of development have you been involved in your career?
Satellite communications. It's still a very important part of communications around the world. And particularly I was involved in the big Earth stations that have been used to collect signals coming from satellites, usually in a geostationary orbit, which are about 36,000 kilometres above the Earth. They're very weak signal. You have a big collecting area, which is the reflector antennas, to get those signals. And then I was involved in the antennas that are on satellites themselves and the design of those. And in particular, I've been involved in the design of the shape beam antennas that cover some of the states of Australia, particularly Western Australia, and we did that in the late 80s. Following on from that, we did other work for other satellites for other countries.
One thing that I did read about you is that you were instrumental in moving antennas away from physical design to computer-based design.
Well, that's very interesting, because what happened was that there have been methods around for many years for designing antennas, and they've been basically used right from the start for satellites and so on. But the techniques that were being used in the early 80s were fairly rudimentary. Myself and some colleagues were involved in looking at much more accurate methods of doing computer design. As a consequence, the sort of design and build and try it out first, which was based on the simpler and older and not very accurate methods, you could get around that. The accurate methods allowed you to do a full design initially and then do a test. And what that did was, in the satellite industry, it halved the cycle time that the satellite manufacturers were able to do. It was from 4 years was used to be the typical time, and then they were able to reduce it to two using proper and accurate methods.
So it was testing the functionality of these before they were actually built?
Well, you could actually be confident that what you designed would be included, and so when you come to build it and then test it, you would see it.
So that sort of thing would have sped up development and advancement as well, wouldn't it?
It did, because what the satellite manufacturers wanted to do was they had a lot of orders, and it meant that they could deliver their satellites or their products within a 2 years time frame compared with four. It cut their costs down, providing they had some good software. This was when I was working at CSIRO. We had the advantage of seeing many of the satellite manufacturers, what tools they were using when they came and talked to us about possible involvement in the Optus program. And we could see that our methods were far more rigorous and so on.
How did you first get into this field? Where did your involvement come from?
After I finished my postdoc at Melbourne University, I went to the United Kingdom. I was working at Queen Mary College, and there was a very strong antenna group there. And they had a couple of very good contracts. I happened to be involved in those projects. And one of them was the design of future for the European Space Agency for the design of future antennas for satellites. And that led on to the sort of basic research that I followed up for a few years after that.
So have you got satellites in space with your work on it?
Yes. In fact, some of them have reached the end of their lifetime because of the usual cycle time. They only last about 10 years, but this was a few years ago from the 80s and early 90s. So the methods have actually advanced slightly beyond what I've described. Nowadays, the techniques that are used tend to be only used rather than the sort of antennas that I was involved in. They still use reflectors, but they shape the surface of them, and they can get even better performance. So the advances are still being made, and they're the ones that are being launched these days.
You're here at La Trobe University to check out the new Tiger radar system that they're working on and the advances that they've got there, which engineering will be deploying in Adelaide later on this year. Can you tell me a bit about how it will work and what are your impressions of it?
I think La Trobe is to be commended to be involved in the Super Dawn, which is the dual Aurora radar network, to be commended for being involved in that project because it's an internationally significant project. It can monitor activities or physical processes that are going on in the ionosphere at 100 to 300 odd kilometres in height above the Earth, as well as be able to get information about some of the things like sea states. So the radar returns from the ionosphere will give the information to be able to determine these sort of features. And the new system that they're building is much more sensitive, and there's been a lot of very good research that's been done on the antennas and on the receivers. It should be easier to keep the antenna fully tuned and working at a high performance. But nonetheless, it's great that they have already got operating systems down in New Zealand and Tasmania, and looking down and towards the Antarctic. The information that's coming back is really important for understanding what happens to our world.
You've recently been elected the president of IEEE, Antennas and Propagation Society. What did this mean to you? I know that you've been involved with them for a long time.
Yeah, well, the IEEE is the largest grouping of professional electrical engineers in the world. And there's a number of interest areas and societies that are in the IEEE. There are about 30. And the Antennas and Propagation Society is one of the smallest, with about 9,000 members worldwide. I'll be president of the Antennas and Propagation Society in next year, in 2013. And it sort of continues the association I've had with the society. I was elected to their organising committee about 10 years ago, and I was editor-in-chief of one of their major technical journals up until a couple of years ago. It's really good working with people in the community worldwide. Also, I can return some of the benefits that the society's given me over the years by doing this work for them. I'm looking forward to interacting with other members of the society, and there's a very strong branch of the society down here in Victoria.
It's a very busy retirement by the sounds of it. How much work do you get done in the back shed?
Well, not so much in the back shed these days.
It's a big back shed.
I do still do some of my own research looking at antenna design, but it's usually through mathematics and sort of modelling, and that makes it easier. I've got some good models that allow me to do that, and I've been following that up. in relation to that, I've been writing a book chapter with a colleague, and I'm in the process of doing that, and still thinking about how I can get involved in some of my areas of specialty, but clearly this involvement of the IEEE is going to take up a little bit of my time. But at the moment, tinkering is done on the computer.
That's Professor Trevor Bird. If you have any questions, comments or feedback about this podcast or any other, then send us an email at podcast@latrobe.edu.au.